Hello to you all. It is I, Baron Von Nasty, opportunist extraordinaire, lord of the commercial enterprise, and master of paid-for radio. With me is our new intern, Steve.
Hey, guys.
It has come to my illustrious attention that the community enterprise is once again low on funding. Oh, such pathos, such drama!
Such a chance for sweeps month's ratings.
Precisely! And this time for certain. We at the Commercial Empire will take advantage of your financial weakness. Without funding from your so-called community, soon the airwaves will belong to me, ha ha!
Well, they'll belong to our investors, at least.
Eh? The same difference. Anyway, we will finish our little conflict once and for all. First, we will make use of our limitless financial resources.
Baron, we don't have one of those.
We don't? No limitless coffers to fund our financial extravagance?
All we've got are 3/4 I found behind the sofa.
What? How can this be? Did those cunning heroes launch a raid on our finances?
Not exactly. The new coffee machine for the office really bit into our budget.
Drat. I knew I shouldn't have splurged on the deluxe model. No matter. Gather our legions of doom and prepare for a full frontal assault!
It's their day off.
Oh, none shall withstand the might of our... What was that again?
They're on a reduced work week. Their union has been upset about lost vacation days.
Oh, of course, that's perfectly reasonable. Of course they would have extra time off. Never mind. Do we have any of the hoarded death sauce left?
Sorry, we tossed the sauce.
What about the salt shaker of mild discomfort?
In jail for assault with salt.
What about the pushy, persnickety, persistent sales bot?
It went up for auction.
Don't tell me.
Yep, someone bought the bot.
What about our toad of traffic blocking?
I'd like to, but someone towed the toad.
What about the toad's toe?
They totally towed the toad's toe.
Well, what do we have?
Well, we have these somewhat unsettling googly-eyed glasses.
Ah, they will not be able to stand against the googliness. The googility. Googlitude. Googletastic googliciousness. Yes? A little help.
By wearing the somewhat unsettling googly-eyed glasses, we can stare at our opponents until they give up.
Ah! On the radio?
It's not very flashy, that's why they were on discount, but it is effective.
Very well. We shall wear the somewhat unsettling googly-eyed glasses until the airwaves are ours! Steve, don the glasses.
There we go.
Yes, yes! I can feel my might increasing tenfold. Oh, soon, the radio world will belong to us. Oh, Steve.
Yep.
What happens now?
It takes a while for the effect to kick in.
Very well. Continue with your community programming. If your fund drive goals are not met, then you will be nothing more than a footnote in history. Or maybe an armpit note. You know, where you do the thing with the armpit. Oh, it just cracks me up.
Shall we actually transition to the next segment in the meantime, sir?
Oh, I suppose so.
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and that was a dramatization of what might happen if community radio was to cease to exist. This week is CITR 101.9 FM's annual fund drive. It started yesterday. It's going to be running for another week or so from yesterday, February 28th until March the 7th. In order to donate, please call us at 604-822-8648. Once again, telephone number 604-822-8648. It spells out UBC unit on your phone using the alphanumeric keypad. And what do we have for you? If you do donate, we have We have prizes to say thank you for your support at various different levels. At the $30 level, you can get Friends of CITR card. The $60 level, you can get the card and a moving mug. At the $101.9 level, you can get the mug and Rad Socks, Rad Socks. We used to be called the Radio Society or Rad Sock, and in order to commemorate that little bit of our history, we have made some radical socks that you wear on your feet. Lovely. And it goes on and on. I have an exclusive offer for Scald's Hall. Call us at 604-822-8648 and donate towards my show. A $30 or more donation will get you an audiobook, a complimentary audiobook from Silk Sound Books. So donate, leave your email address, and I will send you a redemption code for one of the audiobooks at Silk Sound Books. They read a bunch of lovely, lovely classics of literature, and they're read by some of Great Britain's best and awesomest actors, like Terence Stamp, like David Warner, like Tom Baker, like Dame Judi Dench, a whole bunch, and you get to choose your one, whatever one you like. And so there are two of those prizes, limited, and so if you want them, act quickly. In the meantime, why don't we continue on with this very special edition of Scald's Hall here in Vancouver at CITR 101.9 FM.
You mind saying that one more time?
Why do you want to kill me? Why do you want to kill me? I said, why do you want to kill me?
I don't know if it's just me, but I can't understand what you're saying.
Okay, yell at me, Joker.
Nope. Still just guttural sounds to my ears.
Don't really yell at me, Joker. Tell me where you are.
Okay, we're obviously having some failure of communication. I'm not picking up words.
Don't really yell at me, Joker.
Okay. Not gonna help the hitting. Look, I can't, I don't even know if that was a question or a declarative statement.
What are you doing?
I'm not joking. I really can't understand anything that you are saying. Nothing. Have you been to the doctor lately? Cause I think you may have a very severe case of throat cancer.
I don't have throat cancer! Tell me where you are!
There's nothing in the English language that sounds anything like that.
Where is he?
Are you speaking bat? Is that what bat sounds like? Oh god.
Where is he?
I'd really like to answer your questions. I don't know what they are.
Tell me where you are!
You are not speaking anything any human can understand. Am I crazy here? Okay, I know I'm crazy, but I know I can't understand anything that you're saying. So why don't just sound it out? Come on. Enunciate. Do you know what that means? It has nothing to do with physical contact. How do you even communicate with anybody? I can't. There's no words coming out of his mouth. Am I right? There's no. There's fists coming out. Do you see what it sounds like? Just tell me if it's a noun, a verb. Just give me something to work with here. Write it on a piece of paper.
Nom nom nom. Nom nom nom.
Has anybody ever told you that you may have a speech impediment? And that maybe that's the source of all your anger. So maybe...
It's not a speech impediment!
I cannot understand a word you're saying. Talk like a normal person! It's not funny! It's not funny! You do realize what the point of an interrogation is, right? You're interrogating somebody. You're not growling and hitting. There's more to it than that. I have information you need, but you're not gonna get it if I don't know what information is you want. You know what? Okay, you know what? Harvey Dent and Rachel Dawes, I have them hostage. Do you even care? This is not fair! There's no thoughts. There's just pure fists. Oh. Okay, look. My name is Steve, alright? This is me. This is me talking now. This is not the Joker. I can't understand a word you're saying. Look, I'm obviously going through a lot right now, dealing with several issues currently in my life. And you know what? Talking to somebody about it might actually help. But I can't talk to anybody who is only growling. Am I not getting through to you? Guess not.
And that was Illocution Lessons with the Joker. A humorous example, but an example nonetheless of one of the services that community radio offers. Community radio, remember, is an opportunity for people who would normally not have a voice to have a voice. And without services like that, sometimes our messages, our social communication, the milieu of entertainment and information exchange that we have in our society can be as incoherent and mumbled as Batman. Or at least as Batman sometimes is. So remember, community radio offers locally produced independent material that you cannot find broadcast on commercial radio. It's the sorts of things that commercial radio do not broadcast, or the sorts of things that we do. And that includes local artists. That includes musicians that don't make it into the top, very top 40 playing lists. That includes, on my show, spoken word entertainment artists such as voiceover people, such as poets, such as novelists, such as audio dramatists, such as internet series producers, such as all sorts of people that would not normally get a spot on commercial radio shows. All those people are given a voice through the medium of community radio. We're dedicated to education. We play educational programs. I've got one in a minute that's a little bit more serious-minded, but also along the lines of what you can learn from community radio and the sorts of things that I broadcast on my show. And so, why don't we take a listen to one of those right now? But before we do, remember, 604-822-8648. Call in, donate, help us. Help us, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You are our only hope. If you donate to my show, for Skulls Hall at the $30 level or more, you will get a complimentary audiobook from Silk Sound Books. It includes some really, really, really awesome spoken word entertainment. But this is the sort of thing that is not public domain, the sort of thing I cannot play on my show. However, you can enjoy it if you help us out. It's how we can help you out and say thank you for enjoying such programs as mine. So, why don't we take a brief look at the history of the English language in just 10 minutes. Let's go.
The history of English in 10 minutes. Chapter 1, Anglo-Saxon, or whatever happened to the Jutes. The English language begins with the phrase, up yours, Caesar, as the Romans leave Britain, and a lot of Germanic tribes start flooding in. Tribes such as the Angles and the Saxons, who together gave us the term Anglo-Saxon, and the Jutes, who didn't. The Romans left some very straight roads behind, but not much of their Latin language. The Anglo-Saxon vocab was much more useful, as it was mainly words for simple, everyday things like house, woman, loaf, and werewolf. Four of our days of the week were named in honour of Anglo-Saxon gods. They didn't bother with Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, as they'd all gone off for a long weekend. While they were away, Christian missionaries stole in, bringing with them leaflets about jumble sales and more Latin. Christianity was a hit with the locals and made them much happier to take on funky new words from Latin like martyr, bishop and font. Along came the Vikings, with their action man words like drag, ransack, thrust and die. They may have raped and pillaged, but they were also into give and take, two of around 2,000 words they gave English, as well as the phrase, watch out for that man with the enormous axe. Chapter 2, The Norman Conquest, or Excuse My English. 1066. True to his name, William the Conqueror invades England, bringing new concepts from across the Channel like the French language, the Doomsday Book, and the duty-free Gauloise multipack. French was de rigueur for all official business, with words like judge, jury, evidence, and justice coming in and giving John Grisham's career a kickstart. Latin was still used ad nauseam in church, but the common man spoke English, able to communicate only by speaking more slowly and loudly until the others understood him. Words like cow, sheep and swine come from the English-speaking farmers, while the à la carte versions, beef, mutton and pork, come from the French-speaking toffs, beginning a long-running trend for restaurants having completely indecipherable menus. All in all, the English absorbed about 10,000 new words from the Normans, though they still couldn't grasp the rules of cheek-kissing. The bonhomie all ended when the English nation took their new warlike lingo of armies, navies and soldiers and began the Hundred Years' War against France. It actually lasted 116 years, but by that point no one could count any higher in French, and English took over as the language of power. Chapter 3, Shakespeare, or a plaque on both his houses. As the dictionary tells us, about 2,000 new words and phrases were invented by William Shakespeare. He gave us handy words like eyeball, puppy dog and anchovy, and more show-offy words like dauntless, besmirch and lackluster. He came up with the word alligator, soon after he ran out of things to rhyme with crocodile. And a nation of tea drinkers finally took him to their hearts when he invented the hobnob. Shakespeare knew the power of catchphrases as well as biscuits. Without him, we'd never eat our flesh and blood out of house and home. We'd have to say good riddance to the green-eyed monster, and breaking the ice would be as dead as a doornail. If you tried to get your money's worth, you'd be given short shrift, and anyone who laid it on with a trowel could be hoist with his own petard. Of course, it's possible other people used these words first, but the dictionary writers liked looking them up in Shakespeare because there was more cross-dressing and people taking each other's eyes out. Shakespeare's poetry showed the world that English was a rich, vibrant language with limitless expressive and emotional power, and he still had time to open all those tea rooms in Stratford. Chapter 4, The King James Bible, or Let There Be Light Reading. In 1611, the powers that be turned the world upside down with a labour of love, a new translation of the Bible. A team of scribes with the wisdom of Solomon went the extra mile to make King James translation all things to all men, whether from their heart's desire to fight the good fight or just for the filthy lucre. This sexy new Bible went from strength to strength, getting to the root of the matter in a language even the salt of the earth could understand. The writing wasn't on the wall, it was in handy little books, with fire and brimstone preachers reading it in every church. Its words and phrases took root to the ends of the earth, or at least the ends of Britain. The King James Bible is the book that taught us that a leopard can't change its spots, that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, that a wolf in sheep's clothing is harder to spot than you would imagine, and how annoying it is to have a fly in your ointment. In fact, just as Jonathan begat Meribaal, and Meribaal begat Micah, the King James Bible begat a whole glossary of metaphor and morality that still shapes the way English is spoken today. Amen. Chapter 5, The English of Science, or How to Speak with Gravity. Before the 17th century, scientists weren't really recognised, possibly because lab coats had yet to catch on. But suddenly Britain was full of physicists. There was Robert Hooke, Robert Boyle, and even some people not called Robert, like Isaac Newton. The Royal Society was formed out of the Invisible College, after they put it down somewhere and couldn't find it again. At first they worked in Latin. After sitting through Newton's story about the pomum falling to the terra from the arbor for the umpteenth time, the bright sparks realized they all spoke English and they could transform our understanding of the universe much quicker by talking in their own language. But science was discovering things faster than they could name them. Words like acid, gravity, electricity and pendulum had to be invented just to stop their meetings turning into an endless game of charades. Like teenage boys, the scientists suddenly became aware of the human body, coining new words like cardiac and tonsil, ovary and sternum. And the invention of penis and vagina made sex education classes a bit easier to follow, though clitoris was still a source of confusion. Chapter 6. English and Empire, or The Sun Never Sets on the English Language. With English making its name as the language of science, the Bible and Shakespeare, Britain decided to take it on tour, asking only for land, wealth, natural resources, total obedience to the crown, and a few local words in return. They went to the Caribbean looking for gold and a chance to really unwind, discovering the barbecue, the canoe, and a pretty good recipe for rum punch. They also brought back the word cannibal to make their trip sound more exciting. In India, there was something for everyone. Yoga, to help you stay in shape while pretending to be spiritual. If that didn't work, there was the cummerbund to hide the paunch. And if you couldn't even make it up the stairs without turning crimson, they had the bungalow. Meanwhile, in Africa, they picked up words like voodoo and zombie, kicking off the teen horror film. From Australia, English took the words nugget, boomerang and walkabout, and in fact the whole concept of chain pubs. All in all, between toppling Napoleon and the First World War, the British Empire gobbled up around 10 million square miles, 400 million people and nearly 100,000 gin and tonics, leaving new varieties of English to develop all over the globe.
And welcome back to us live here at CITR 101.9 FM. We are halfway through or so of listening to A Brief History of the English Language. This is a public domain spoken word entertainment piece that has been that we are able to broadcast. It's the sort of thing, the sort of entertainment you would not otherwise get because it is community radio. Community radio is a lot more than my show. Remember that we offer a lot of musical acts that otherwise wouldn't be get covered. We offer a lot of news coverage that is not beholden to major corporate news interests. And that is becoming more and more important, a service almost by the minute in our society. We offer multicultural programming. We offer the chance for people who would not normally get their voices heard to be heard. We offer local coverage. We offer content that falls well outside of the normal blinding content of the straight and narrow of commercial radio, but that is still very much worth your while. If this is important to you, please call us 604-822-8648. It is people like you and me that make this possible, and we can't do it without community support. This is a community radio station. These are community services that we offer, and without them, the communication milieu of our society is a lot less. So please call in any little bit that you might have lying around those three quarters in your couch. That's enough to help us out. 604-822-8648. If you call and donate to my show, I will make a special offer. If you make a donation of $20 or more to my show right now or sometime before the show is up, I will provide you with a complimentary audiobook from Silk Sound Books. They're great. They're read by some of the most legendary British actors we have working for us today. And there are a selection of lovely classics from literary history. And speaking of our literary history, why don't we return to that right now at CITR 101.9 FM.
Chapter 7, The Age of the Dictionary, or The Definition of a Hopeless Task. With English expanding in all directions, along came a new breed of men called lexicographers who wanted to put an end to this anarchy, a word they defined as what happens when people spell words slightly differently from each other. One of the greatest was Dr. Johnson, whose Dictionary of the English Language took him 9 years to write. It was 18 inches tall and contained 42,773 entries, meaning that even if you couldn't read, it was still pretty useful if you wanted to reach a high shelf. For the first time, when people were calling you a pickle herring, a jobbernowl, or a fop doodle, you could understand exactly what they meant, and you'd have the consolation of knowing they were all using the standard spelling. Try as he might to stop them, words kept being invented, and in 1857 a new book was started that would become the Oxford English Dictionary. It took another 70 years to be finished after the first editor resigned to be an archbishop. The second died of TB, and the third was so boring that half his volunteers quit, and one of them ended up in an asylum. It eventually appeared in 1928, and it's continued to be revised ever since, proving the whole idea you can stop people making up words is complete snuffbumble. Chapter 8, American English, or not English, but somewhere in the ballpark. From the moment Brits first landed in America, they needed names for all the new plants and animals, so they borrowed words like raccoon, squash, and moose from the Native Americans, as well as most of their territory. Waves of immigrants fed America's hunger for words. The Dutch came sharing coleslaw and cookies, probably as a result of their relaxed attitude to drugs. Later, the Germans arrived selling pretzels from delicatessens, and the Italians arrived with their pizza, their pasta, and their mafia, just like Mama used to make. America spread a new language of capitalism, getting everyone worried about the break-even and the bottom line, whether they were blue chip or white collar. The commuter needed a whole new system of freeways, subways, and parking lots, and quickly, before words like merger and downsizing could be invented. American English drifted back across the pond as Brits got the hang of their cool movies and their groovy jazz. There were even some old forgotten English words that lived on in America, so they carried on using fall, faucets, diapers and candy, while the Brits moved on to autumn, taps, nappies and NHS dental care. Chapter 9, Internet English, or Language Reverts to Type. In 1972, the first email was sent. Soon the internet arrived, a free global space to share information, ideas, and amusing pictures of cats. Before the internet, English changed through people speaking it, but the net brought typing back into fashion and hundreds of cases of repetitive strain injury. Nobody had ever had to download anything before, let alone use a toolbar, and the only time someone set up a firewall, it ended with a massive insurance claim and a huge pile of charred wallpaper. Conversations were getting shorter than the average attention span. Why bother writing a sentence when an abbreviation would do and leave you more time to blog, poke and reboot when your hard drive crashed? In My Humble Opinion became IMHO. By the Way became BTW. And If We're Honest That Life-Threatening Accident Was Pretty Hilarious simply became Fail. Some changes even passed into spoken English. For your information, people frequently ask questions like, how can LOL mean laugh out loud and lots of love? But if you're going to complain about that, then UG2BK. Chapter 10, Global English, or Whose Language Is It Anyway? In the 1500 years since the Romans left Britain, English has shown a unique ability to absorb, evolve, invade, and if we're honest, steal. After foreign settlers got it started, it grew into a fully-fledged language all of its own, before leaving home and travelling the world, first via the high seas, then via the high-speed broadband connection, pilfering words from over 350 languages and establishing itself as a global institution. All this despite a written alphabet that bears no correlation to how it sounds and a system of spelling that even Dan Brown couldn't decipher. Right now, around 1.5 billion people speak English. Of these, about a quarter are native speakers, a quarter speak it as their second language, and half are able to ask for directions to a swimming pool. There's Hinglish, which is Hindi English, Chinglish, which is Chinese English, and Singlish, which is Singaporean English, and not that bit where they speak in musicals. So in conclusion, the language has got so little to do with England these days, it may well be time to stop calling it English. But if someone does think up a new name for it, it should probably be in Chinese.
And welcome back to us at CITR 101.9 FM. It is our fun drive this week. And what you just heard is an example of the sort of public domain spoken word entertainment that I broadcast here on Scald's Hall. It is the sort of stuff that you are going to be hard-pressed to find in mainstream media. And is the sort of stuff that will take you for bloody ever to go and looking for it on your own without knowing what it is. So please, think about it. Public domain radio, community radio, provides a very important service. We try to educate people. We have educational programming. We try to include alternative and inclusive entertainment. And we try to do this without having to sell a lot of ad space. And if you know how commercial broadcasting works, it is very often the people who run the commercials who get a lot of say in the sort of stuff that gets broadcast, either by refusing to run ads during certain programming they don't like, or even more direct means than that. And here in community radio, we try to remove ourselves from those forces as much as possible so that we can provide entertainment, information, a voice to people who would otherwise not get one on commercial radio, and to give those people a chance to thrive and flourish. That's the environment that we try to do. We try to tell stories of individual people, new stories, entertainment stories, musical stories, anything. In order to do that, that number is 604-822-8648. Please call in if you're listening now and donate just a couple of dollars once a year to keep us on the air. We're going to be moving into the new Student Union building. The University of British Columbia is building a new building right next to ours. As a matter of fact, if you've been up here to the Student Union building in the last 2 years, you've noticed that half of our exits are closed because they're putting that building up. That's what it is. And we have to move in there. We have to move all of our equipment, all of our archives, all of our everything, because we'll not be in this space anymore. We've been here for 30 years in this particular space, no longer than that. We've been in this space, I think, since this sub opened. We've been on the air for 76 years now and counting. But we only do that with the ongoing support of our community. To support that community, 604-822-8648. If you call into my show, make a donation of $20 or more to Skull Tall, I will provide you with an audiobook that is worth essentially the same thing. It is a lovely prize. It is listening to some of the greatest actors the British Empire has of this generation, reading some of the greatest works of literature. It's a really cool prize. I've got a ton of these myself. The sorts of things that, due to their nature, I cannot broadcast on community radio because they are not in the Creative Commons, but you will enjoy them greatly. And we've played similar items to those in the past on our show. And speaking of the literary heritage that we try to promote, produce, and promulgate, in other words, beginning with P, let's take a listen to a little interesting public domain bit about Shakespearean pronunciation, how it's changed, and how it stayed the same. So we'll take a short trip into that right now on CITR 101.9 FM. Before we go, 604-822-8648. Let us know what you think.
The Globe Theatre, which opened in 1994, very near to its former site, specialises in original productions of Shakespeare. But it wasn't until 2004 that a play was performed in the original pronunciation, known as OP. The play was Romeo and Juliet.
Well, the Globe is known for its original practices. This is why it is here, to try and recreate the theatre as it was in 1600 and thereabouts. And when they started it off, they decided to do original costume, original music with original instruments, original movement around the stage and so on. But they never did original pronunciation because they thought, quite wrongly but understandably, they thought nobody would understand it. But it was a very, very successful occasion. The seats were packed for that weekend. Everybody loved it. And it was such a success that the Globe then decided to do a second production the following year, production of Troilus and Cressida.
It transports you back through the centuries. It's a very magical, almost hair-raising experience, especially in this space, to hear that accent, a space that's sort of as close as we can get to a 400-year-old theatre, and then an accent that's as close as we can get to a 400-year-old accent with a 400-year-old play. If anything, it rounds the experience of going to see a Shakespeare play out.
Any period in the history of the English language can be studied from the point of view of how it was pronounced at the time. Old English, Chaucer, and so on. In relation to Shakespeare, we're talking about the sound system, or phonology, that was in use in a period called Early Modern English, and in the period specifically around about the year 1600. Now, it's a period during which pronunciation was changing very, very rapidly. So there isn't just one kind of OP. There's an OP that evolves throughout the period. For example, early on in the period, people were pronouncing the word musician as musician, musician. Later in the period, it had evolved into musician. And of course, later still, it became musician.
David Crystal and his son Ben regularly worked together to demonstrate how original pronunciation differs from modern pronunciation.
It's an interesting accent to tune your ear into. So we're going to run through a few pieces of of Shakespeare, first in a modern sort of received pronunciation accent, the accent that you're used to hearing Shakespeare in, and then we'll switch into original pronunciation. And probably Dad will do some and I'll do some as well, so you get to hear it in a different voice.
Their first example comes from Henry V. Ben gives the modern pronunciation, and David the OP.
Oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention.
Oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention.
A kingdom for a stage, princes to act and monarchs to behold the swelling scene.
A kingdom for a stage, princes to act and monarchs to behold the swelling scene.
Then should the warlike Harry, like himself, assume the port of Mars.
Then should the warlike Harry, like himself, assume the port of Mars.
And that his heels leashed in like hounds, should famine, sword and fire crouch for employment.
And that his heels leashed in like hounds, should famine, sword and fire crouch for employment.
How do you know that that was original pronunciation?
Well, there are three kinds of evidence that you look for when you're working out the pronunciation of a stage in the history of the language. The first and the most important piece of evidence is the observations made by people who were writing on the language at the time. There were several people who actually commented on how words sounded, which words rhymed, and so on. For example, how do we know that the R is pronounced at such a time? Well, Ben Jonson, the dramatist, actually tells us at one point. He says we pronounce the R after a vowel. He actually calls it a doggy sound, grr, or something like that. And so that kind of evidence, when you look at all the sounds, all the vowels, all the consonants, you put it together, and that's the first kind. The second kind of evidence is the spellings that people use at the time. The spellings were a much better guide to pronunciation then than spelling is today. So at one point in Romeo and Juliet, the word film is spelt P-H-I-L-O-M-E. Therefore, film. And that's a very important indication. But the third kind of evidence, which is absolutely critical from a dramatic point of view, is that there are rhymes and puns which don't work in modern English that do work in OP. One I remember that we did at the Globe here was the pun that suddenly leapt out at us in the prologue to Romeo and Juliet. You do that one?
Right. So, two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our sin, from ancient grudge bred to new mutiny, where civil blood led civil lands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, whose misadventured piteous overthrows doth with their death bury their parents' strife. And it's that, it's the lines,
it's
isn't
the
it?
It's the lines, from forth the fatal loins. Now, the thing is, loins was pronounced loins, and the word lines was pronounced loins. So
yeah,
there is a pun,
double meaning.
Yeah, a pun on loins and lines, genealogical lines on the one hand and physical loins on the other, which is completely missed if you do it in modern English. It's a good example.
David and Ben have also discovered that nearly two-thirds of Shakespeare's sonnets have rhymes that don't work in modern English, but do work in OP.
Give us a good one. 116?
I think 116 is interesting because lots of people have it at their weddings and they think of it as being a very sort of, you know, highfalutin sonnet. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. But it completely changes in OP, particularly because of the rhymes. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and wakes, but bears it out e'en to the edge of dumb. If this be error and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved.
Yeah. Proved and loved. I mean, it's a lovely ending, isn't it? Proved and loved, it simply doesn't work.
It completely falters. If this be error and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved.
That's right.
It doesn't quite work.
When Romeo and Juliet was performed at the Globe, David and Ben were advisors on the production.
One of the most interesting things was the way in which the actors all said that the OP altered their performance quite fundamentally. You have to remember the play was being done in two versions that year. There was a modern English version and an OP version as well. The actors had to learn the thing twice. And it just changed the way they perceived their characters, didn't it, Ben?
It did. Well, I mean, it's a lot faster, the accent. You know, with modern Shakespeare, it's often very reverential in the way that we pronounce it. You know, it's assume the port of Mars. It's much faster in OP. It's assume the port of Mars. The OP Romeo and Juliet was 10 minutes faster. But it does something else to you as well. To me, it drops my voice. I use my bottom register a lot more, you know, assume the port of Mars. It makes me sort of hunker down. Doesn't sort of seem so cut off from the neck, you know, from Mules of Fire. It connects with the body a bit more for some reason. It's an earthier accent.
The experience of Romeo and Juliet also demonstrated that far from making Shakespeare more difficult to understand, it can actually make the original meaning clearer, as can be seen in this extract from As You Like It.
And so from ore to ore we ripe and ripe, and then from ore to ore we rot and rot, and thereby hangs a tale. It's a really, really rude sex joke. He's talking about, you know, prostitutes and you know, the king's evil and all that kind of thing. It's completely missed when you do it in a modern accent. And the last time I saw As You Like It, the actor came to the front and said, and so from hour to hour we ripe and ripe, and from hour to hour we rot and rot, and thereby hangs a tale. Anyway, you know, the gag is completely missed.
What we see is a joke working that doesn't work in modern English, and it's all based on one very simple sound shift. The pronunciation of whore as or. You'll notice two things about it. The H drops at the beginning. H often dropped in early modern English in that way. And you get this other change, our, in modern English, becoming or in the earlier version. And the combination of the two changes together produces a coming together of the two words, and therefore a perfect pun.
There's something about working our way back to Shakespeare rather than dragging him into the 21st century. When you're standing on the Globe stage, they always light the theatre as if it's daylight, because Shakespeare's plays would have been performed at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that means that you can make direct eye contact with every single member of the audience. And then suddenly Shakespeare, going to see a Shakespeare play, becomes a two-way dynamic, a complicité. It means that as an actor, as Hamlet, I can come out and ask you, what should I do? Should I kill Claudius? You know, I don't know what to do. Everything's really confusing. Help me, you know. That's what the Shakespeare's monologues were about. So if you can sort of imagine that there's that extra dimension when you're working in a space like this, you get a similar sort of extra dimension when you use Shakespeare's accent.
Take a left and then to the right. Set him down. There's another batch. Help that other guy over there. Lift with your legs, not with your back. Flip it sideways. Don't try to be a Superman here. All right, we got two circuits here. We got the yellow circuit and the green circuit. Let's just keep them separated. Hold it right there. Now we need to bring about 2% more in. Good. Here we go. A little bit more. A little bit more. That looks good. Let's get that bottom structure really settled in. Let's bring in the side unit. Watch out. Try to be careful with the branches here, guys. Don't peel away the bark.
For more than 75 years, CITR has kept you moving 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now we need you to help us move. Donate to this year's fund drive by calling 604-822-8648 or go online to citr.ca. Not only will your donations help power the station you love, but you can also receive exclusive fund drive swag, such as the CITR mug, the Radsock Rad Socks, hoodies, t-shirts, and so much more. Again, please call 604-822-8648 or go online to citr.ca. And from all of us at CITR, thank you.
Hello. Come on. Come on, do it now. Call me. I'm here. Do it now. Call me. Let's go. 604-822-8648. That's the number to call. It is the week of the CITR Fund Drive here, and we're trying to raise money, as you just heard, in order to move into the new sub-building. Community radio provides a ton of wonderful, innovative, creative, lovely, community-based, locally owned, maintained, and developed artistic expression of the sort you will not find in any other medium. So give us a call, 604-822-8648. If you call and donate $20 or more towards my show, Scald's Hall, I will provide you with an audiobook from Silk Sound Books. And coming up, I will have an example of a reading that is slightly less copyrighted, shall we say, than the ones that I'm giving away, but ones that I think will demonstrate nicely the sorts of materials that I try to propagate here on Scald's Hall, and the sort, a general example of the sorts of things that the other programmers, administrators, staff, volunteers, and everyone else involved in the station loves and promotes and tries to uphold. So let's take a listen to Boris Karloff and the Little Match Girl here at CITR 101.9 FM.
It was late on a bitterly cold, snowy New Year's Eve. A poor little girl was wandering in the dark, cold streets, and she was bareheaded and barefooted. She certainly had had slippers on when she left home, but they were not much good, for they were so huge. They had last been worn by her mother, and they fell off the poor little girl's feet when she was running across the street to avoid two carriages that were rolling rapidly by. One of the shoes couldn't be found at all, and the other was picked up by a boy who ran off with it, saying that it would do for a cradle when he had children of his own. So the poor little girl had to go on with her little bare feet, which were red and blue with the cold. She carried a quantity of matches in her old apron and held a packet of them in her hand. Nobody had bought any of her during all the long day. Nobody had even given her a copper. The poor little creature was hungry and perishing with cold, and she looked the picture of misery. The snowflakes fell upon her long yellow hair, which curled so prettily round her face, but she paid no attention to that. Lights were shining from every window, and there was a most delicious odor of roast goose in the streets, for it was New Year's Eve. She couldn't forget that. She found a corner where one house projected a little beyond the next one, and here she crouched, drawing up her feet under her, but she was colder than ever. She didn't dare go home. She had not sold any matches and had not earned a single penny. Her father would beat her. Besides, it was almost as cold at home as it was here. They only had the roof over them, and the wind whistled through it, though they stuffed up the biggest cracks with rags and straw. Her little hands were almost dead with cold. Oh, one little match would do some good. Dared she pull one out of the bundle and strike it on the wall to warm her fingers? She pulled one out. Whoosh, how it spluttered, how it blazed. It burned with a bright, clear flame, just like a little candle when she held her hands round it. It was a very curious candle, too. The little girl fancied that she was sitting in front of a big stove with polished brass feet and handles. There was a splendid fire blazing in it and warming her so beautifully, but what happened? Just as she was stretching out her feet to warm them, the blaze went out, the stove vanished, and she was left sitting with the end of the burnt-out match in her hand. She struck a new one. It burned and it blazed up, and where the light fell upon the wall, it became transparent like gauze, and she could see right through it into the room. The table was spread with a snowy cloth and pretty china. A roast goose stuffed with apples and prunes was steaming on it. And what was even better, the goose hopped from the dish with the carving knife and fork sticking in its back, and it waddled across the floor. It came right up to the poor child, and then the match went out, and there was nothing to be seen but the thick black ball. Again she lit another, and this time she was sitting under a lovely Christmas tree. It was much bigger and more beautifully decorated than the one that she had seen when she peeped through the glass doors at the rich merchant's house this very last Christmas. Thousands of lighted candles gleamed upon its branches, and coloured pictures, such as she had seen in the shop windows, looked down to her. The little girl stretched out both her hands towards them. Then out went the match. All the Christmas candles rose higher and higher till she saw that they were only the twinkling stars. One of them fell and made a bright streak of light across the sky. Someone is dying, thought the little girl, For her old grandmother, the only person who had ever been kind to her, used to say, when a star falls, a soul is going up to God. Now she struck another match against the wall, and this time it was her grandmother who appeared in the circle of flame. She saw her quite clearly and distinctly, looking so gentle and happy. Grandmother, cried the little creature, oh, do take me with you. I know you'll vanish when the match goes out. You'll vanish like the warm stove, the delicious goose, and the beautiful Christmas tree. She hastily struck a whole bundle of matches because she did so long to keep her grandmother with her. The light of the matches made it as bright as day. Grandmother had never before looked so big or so beautiful, and she lifted the little girl up in her arms, and they soared in a halo of light and joy far, far above the earth, where there was no more cold, no hunger, no pain, for they were with God. In the cold morning light, the poor little girl sat there in a corner between the houses with rosy cheeks and a smile on her face. Dead, frozen to death on the last night of the old year. New Year's Day broke on the little body, still sitting with the ends of the burnt-out matches in her hand. She must have tried to warm herself, they said. Nobody knew what beautiful vision she had seen, nor in what a halo she had entered with her grandmother upon the glories of the new year.
Independent radio station at odds against major broadcasting corporations.
I want CITR.
Dead.
I want CITR.
His family. Dead. I want a
radio station.
Burnt to the ground. I want to go to
Vancouver, BC.
I want to piss out his ashes.
Was given an opportunity they thought they would never get.
It's UBC. It says here that they want to give us a new radio station.
But they were up against one major problem.
How are we going to pay to move all our stuff into the new radio station?
CITR Radio presents the 2014 Fund Drive, a heartwarming story of compassion and generosity in which listeners like you donate to help support the station you love.
I just donated and it felt awesome.
For more information, go to www.citr.ca.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and that was the sound of ultimate suffering. That is the sound you will hear if community radio stations such as CITR 101.9 FM cease to be. We're a community radio station, community-run, community-funded. That means that we don't go to commercial interests as much as possible. We try to avoid going to commercial interests in order to fund what we do. That means that our funding comes from you. Call us at 604-822-8648. You have a few minutes left of Scald's Hall. Coming up next will be Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. Before that, if you make a donation of $20 or more to my show, Scald's Hall, I will provide you with an audiobook from Silk Sound Books. Call in, leave a donation. I will leave you the book. They're great. Classics of English literature read by classical artists, performers from the UK whose names you've seen in movies for decades and decades. Names like Terence Stamp, names like David Warner, like Judi Dench, like Julian Glover. But anyway, we have one final little skit for us here that we will take a listen to, and then we will start over the handover process to our next show, Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam.
And now, a dramatic reading of a real breakup letter from a real person. Dear loser, Chris, I thought you liked me. You said it yourself. I hate you. People only say you asked me out because you needed a date for the dance and that after the dance you would dump me. Well, guess what, bastard? I dumped you because you were thinking that I cheated on you. I didn't so like idiots that you guys are and so smart that you are. You called me a slut. I hung up on you because you told me it on the phone because I guess you weren't man enough to tell me it in my face. I hate you, and also, guess what? My mother hates you too. That she the one who put me up to this. You come to breakfast every morning, and I ain't stupid. You try to sit next to me and my little bro, who only 7 years old, hates you too, and don't even know what you did, and is always blocking your chair. Ha ha! I went out with another boy after you, and after we were over, you, an idiot dad, you even tried to ask me out again. I didn't break up with him for you, okay? I hate you. I've always hated you, spreading to everyone that I cheated on you when you just got jealous that I used to talk to your friends. To your so-gee-louse, you automatically think I like them. Well, guess maybe I do, maybe I don't. Got a problem, you ain't my boyfriend anymore. I don't have to tell you who I like or who I am with and why. Got it, I don't like you anymore. The other day you told me that I have to tell you who I like or who I am thinking of going out with. It's none of your business. Got that, you loser. I hate you, and I know you still like me, but I don't like you. I don't care what your stupid friends say. You make me touch your hands for stupid reasons. You accidentally say you hugged me. I will never like you again. I hate you. I hate you more than anything in this damn world. I'd rather date a spider or a rat than you were so ugly and fat. And then saying that I loved you, please see. You're such an asswipe and bastard. I hate you. Well, bye, you piece of shit. I have more things to do right now than remember you.
Ah, it is the end, my friends. And so our plan draws to fruition. Behold the might of the commercial enterprise in all its glory. Now I shall control all radio broadcasts. No more community programming to clog up the airwaves. I am as constant as the Northern Star. Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair! Now I shall begin. It didn't work.
Sir, it didn't work. Sorry, the warranty on the somewhat unsettling googly-eyed glasses does not cover peace, love, and friendship. Enough people contributed to the community enterprise to keep it on the air.
Ah, the power of community, of coming together for a common and noble cause to make sure that everyone has a fair chance to express their views on publicly accessible media. It's just so... Well, it makes me want to puke. Find a barf bag, Steve.
One heavy-duty barf bag coming up.
You may have won this round, community enterprise. So enjoy these and other fine programming from